talks about it, and then goes to poetry and talks about that. Again, bringing painting and poetry together such that you can illuminate one by what you say about the other. He says, once Cimabue thought to hold the field as painter, Giotto is now all the rage. Okay, again, reflecting that change that Bill talked about in artistic sensibility, that change toward more realism, dimming the luster of the other's fame. Then he goes to poetry, right? He says, so one Guido takes from the other one poetic glory. Turns out that there were two poets named Guido who were both friends and fellow poets with Dante. One we've already met, of course, Guido Cavalcanti, whom we saw in Inferno, indirectly. It was his father who said to Dante, where's my son? Why isn't with you? It's that Guido. Well, apparently his fame is already giving way to another poet named Guido Guinicelli. But notice the clincher here. It says, one Guido takes from the other poetic glory, and already born, perhaps, is he who will drive both from fame's nest. Got anybody in mind? Well, one way of looking at it, of course, is that it's kind of a statement of artistic pride sneaking its way in there. But I think that actually you can look at it as a statement of humility as well. In other words, if you look at it in the sense that, yes, the fame is here, it's going to come, it's going to go, it's basically saying that this is qualified praise. This is saying basically the reason that you write this kind of stuff is not for fame, right? You don't write it primarily because it's going to get you on Jay Leno's show, or you're going to make the daytime talk shows. Dante gets to go on Oprah. Essentially, that's presented as, to say the least, an insufficient reason for doing this kind of thing. And, of course, a real problem with somebody, the more talent you have, the more tendency you have to have that kind of pride. The thing is that Dante was not only good, he knew he was good. And how do you deal with the sin of pride in those circumstances?
I would just add one footnote before we move on. Ron might want to add one or two more things. I would add one more footnote before we move on to the end of the purgatory. And that is that when Dante moves from the terrace of pride to the next terrace, the terrace of envy, one of the things he hears is one of the Beatitudes. That is to say, one of those Beatitudes from the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are this, blessed are that. And what he hears here is indeed, blessed are the poor in spirit. That again, like the removal of the pea, like the examples of the sin and the attendant virtue, we're also going to find that as Dante moves from terrace to terrace, there will always be one of these Beatitudes recited, so that we always have an example of Mary, and we always have a Beatitude in each of the terraces of the seven-story mountain.
In fact, before we leave this terrace, one other thing. In the next canto, Dante sees some of the examples of prideful folk, and it turns out that the poet himself does a kind of sexy thing here. Says that, here's what I saw. Looking down, there were all of these examples of pride, and he lists them all. And once again, they come both from the Judeo-Christian tradition, biblical examples, and from the tradition of classical antiquity, from the tradition of Greek and Roman mythology. And he's looking, he says, this is what I saw, this is what I saw, this is what I saw, and he lists them all. But in doing that, he plays a very interesting game with the alert reader. He does a kind of visual joke, a kind of visual pun, by doing what's called an acrostic. Okay, you learn things when you read by understanding the words and putting them together in sentences, but it's also true that the words form a kind of visual pattern on the page. Now, for the most part, we ignore the pattern itself, but sometimes poets can deliberately exploit that kind of thing. You know, poets, E.E. Cummings used to do that kind of thing. George Herbert earlier, he has a poem called Easter Wings, and basically it's in the form of butterfly wings sort of both ways, that it starts big, goes small, and then goes out again. The pattern that the words form on paper, in other words, is a significant carrier of meaning over and apart from, in addition to what the words actually mean. Dante does something like that here by forming what's called an acrostic using the initial words okay, the initial letters of each of the words that